goodness, it's that time of the week again. Wednesday. It is, in all honesty, the one program that I look forward to bringing to you, because at the end of this hour, I actually walk away feeling accomplished, like I've brought some information to you and some commentary that you can benefit by, not just the political stuff. I believe that some of the things that we do on Tuesdays, you can benefit by from a financial aspect, or at least planning, whatever. But the programs that I'm more and more committed to on Wednesday leave me feeling at peace at the end of a program, interestingly enough, which is more than I feel with most of the rest of them. Good evening. Jeffrey Bennett here on a Wednesday night. The Edge to Health with you. I hope you heard that right. That's my twisted sense of humor, to health with you. I could alter the pronunciation a little bit, and never mind. I was sitting on something for longer than I should have, and I was reviewing some of my files that I have put aside for publishing or for using in commentary, whatever the case may be, and I came across one that I'm embarrassed. It's a month old, and I don't think the date is all that important, because it's the subject matter that is so interesting, and yet we never heard about any of this stuff on the mainstream news, which I find quite unusual. What's more unusual is some of the major participants in this hearing that took place in Washington, D.C. are some of the people that I've got the least amount of use for. Now, it's not that I've done a complete turnaround by any stretch of the imagination, but when I share this story with you, you're going to find this kind of, to some degree, of interest. It gives one a slightly different view of these, at least three of these individuals, and it was a real shocker to me. There is a woman in the House of Representatives named Katie Porter. I don't know what state she's from. Oh, she's a Democrat from California, a former consumer protection attorney. Now, what's interesting is I went online trying to find an image of her, and very pleasant-looking image, et cetera, et cetera. Thank you. And yet the image that's used in the article, well, let's just say that the Muslims would not want anything to do with her because they don't like pork. I got to get some comedy in there. Katie Porter. House Democrats, including three of the squad members, tore into pharmaceutical industry chief executives on September the 30th in a congressional hearing regarding big pharma profiteering. Porter verbally eviscerated one CEO for more than tripling the price of a critical cancer drug. Yeah. Unbelievable. It marked the first day of a two-day House Oversight Committee hearing entitled Unsustainable Drug Prices, Testimony from the CEOs. Bristol Myers Squibb CEO Giovanni Cafario, Teva Pharmaceuticals CEO Kari Schultz, and former Celgene CEO Mark Alice all endured nearly 4 hours of grilling over the price of prescription drugs, which are almost always far more expensive in the U.S. than anywhere else in the world. Well, you know why. Because we're the rich. We're the infamous. We can afford anything. Well, Porter was the most ferocious committee member to address the CEOs. She brought out her infamous whiteboard, attacked Celgene's repeated price hikes for the cancer drug Revlimid, which now costs $763 per dose. In 2005, it cost a mere $2 or $215. When Allies attempted to explain that the drug has been approved for new uses, Porter hit back hard. Did the drug start to work faster? Were there fewer side effects? How did you change the formula or production of Revlimid to justify this price increase? Porter asked. To recap here, she continued, the drug didn't get any better. The cancer patients didn't get any better. You just got better at making money. You just refined your skills at price gouging. Now, Porter has built a reputation for speaking tough truth to power on issues ranging from defending access to crucial public benefits to challenging megabank CEOs on income inequality to exposing the pernicious influence of dark money in politics. Toward the end of that four-hour session, three of the four members of the so-called squad, Representatives Rashida Tlaib from Michigan, Ayanna Pressley from Massachusetts, and AOC from New York, slammed the CEOs over what Ocasio-Cortez called exorbitant cost of life-saving medications. Armed with a chart showing the cost of 40 milligram of Teva's multiple sclerosis drug, Copaxone, is more than five times as high in the U.S. as it is in Britain. Ocasio-Cortez refuted an assertion by Schultz that medications cost more in the U.S. because American patients have very broad and very early access to new drugs. Citing Teva's own internal documents, Ocasio-Cortez showed the company was forced to lower prices by European governments, which, unlike the U.S., have instituted spending controls, even as it raised prices for American patients. Pressley then went on to assert that the lack of access to affordable life-saving medicine is an injustice that represents an act of economic violence and an attack on the basic principle that healthcare is a fundamental human right. While Tlaib ripped Schultz for using charitable donations like a side hustle, she concluded by saying, your pharmaceutical company makes these so-called charitable donations so you look like you give a shit about sick people. Those are her words. And I don't normally do that. I could have probably found some other way, but you're going to hear it in the tape in just a moment. She concluded by saying, but in reality, these are just another scheme by your corporation to make money off of sick people. Let's go to this audio clip. I think you're going to be surprised with it. This is Tlaib. Rashid Tlaib.
Thank you so much, Chairwoman Maloney, for this important hearing and for our committee staff for all their hard work. Mr. Schultz, I'm sure serving as the CEO, you may have little to no contact with how your actions hurt real people, like my residents in 13 District Strong. Your actions have consequences, as you have heard from many of my colleagues. It has hurt people like Ms. Lisa McRipley, who lives with MS in my district. Lisa pays $6,000 per month for her MS medication and about an additional $1,000 just to treat her symptoms of pain, fatigue, and balance. Now, Mr. Schultz, I know $7,000 per month may not seem like a much to you as the CEO of Teva Pharmaceuticals, but Lisa doesn't have $7,000 of disposable income per month. The vast majority of Americans don't. I understand that Copaxone, the drug used for MS, was first introduced on the market in 1997, and the wholesale acquisition at that time was only $8,000 annually. Today, it is $70,000. So, Mr. Schultz, yes or no, do you believe it is reasonable for Lisa in my district and others like her to pay nearly $70,000 a year to access Copaxone?
No, I would not think that would be reasonable at all. But
thank you. I just asked for a yes or no. It's not reasonable. So let's talk about other items that your company does. So I also know that the drug companies frequently mislead the public by claiming charitable programs help ensure that patients who need medications can get them. But those programs do not cover everyone, and they are not reliable for patients, and they actually drive up the cost for many of my residents. In fact, I actually asked Lisa, who is on Social Security, if she was able to access such charitable relief, and she had no luck. Documents obtained by this committee, Mr. Schultz, suggest that these programs actually serve drug companies' own financial interest. Mr. Schultz, Does your company donate to third-party independent charities which covers Medicare beneficiaries' out-of-pocket costs for Copaxone?
We do contribute to charities that have the purpose to secure access.
Great. So, Mr. Schultz, yes or no, would you consider donations to these foundations to be financial investments?
No, I would not.
Okay.
Consider it to be help.
Well, let me tell you why you're misleading us right now. Internal documents provided to the committee show that Teva company did view these programs as financial investments, even described them that way. In your own 2008 Copaxone work plan, which is Exhibit 37 in your materials, estimated that the company would lose over $11 million in sales if it reduced its, quote, investment in Medicare Part D grants by $44.3 million, as you can see here. The work plan also estimated that Copaxone net sales would decline by $45 million in 2011 if your company were to, quote, eliminate Medicare PAP investment. So, Mr. Schultz, it seems that Teva company expected Copaxone sales to decline if it decreased donations through these grants. Is that correct?
This is more than 10 years before I joined the company.
It's pretty clear, Mr. Schultz. In my district, Mr. Schultz, we call this a side hustle. Your pharmaceutical company makes these so-called charitable donations so you look like you give a shit about sick people. But in reality, these are just another scheme by your corporation to make money off of sick people. Mr. Schultz, Lisa needs her medication to live. She's not part of a hustle and should not be one. Let's turn to Teva's program to cover the copays of Copaxone patients with commercial insurance. Again, this is how you're misleading the public. According to Teva's own internal analysis, the company spent $54.6 million on commercial copay program in 2014. But in return, you all got $257 million back. That's 371% profit, Mr. Schultz. Mr. Schultz, these are company's own estimates. This is your own documents. And they suggest that what you and other corporate executives claim to be charitable-type programs are actually profit-motivated efforts to retain patients and generate sales. I want to close off with Lisa's words, and this is so important because rarely do we put a human face behind so much of the actions by these corporations. Lisa said, quote, "We need this medication to have a decent life. There is no cure right now to MS. So we need this because we want to continue to contribute to society. We want to make an impact." So, Mr. Schultz, you need to go back and actually stop misleading the public and making sure that these drugs, again, have people's quality of life at jeopardy, their right to live at jeopardy. I ask all of you and for my colleagues to please pay attention to many of these documents again submitted to the record. Thank you so much. I yield.
Wow, in Dr. E's words. I certainly don't love Rashad by any stretch of the imagination. I think that we have entered a time period in the political world of some pretty foul language coming out of the mouths of some of these people. But I must applaud her for not taking any garbage from this CEO. It's all about profit. They don't give a damn about making people well. In many respects, it is a form of let's get the money because we're going to kill them anyway, and we don't have to worry about giving it back. It's appalling to me. She's done a damn good job here. Now, if she'd get off some of the rest of the stuff, I might have a greater respect for her, but that's never going to happen. She's part of the squad. Let us move forward. And by the way, if you're interested in listening more carefully and watching her approach, this particular piece is entitled Katie Porter and the Squad Blast Big Pharma Over Exorbitant. And somehow I cut part of the title off. But I'll figure out what it is and get it put back up there. Very, very interesting piece. There's also another video attached to the article with the pharmaceutical executives testifying at the House hearings. Why this thing didn't explode on television, I don't know. Oh, that's right. It didn't fit the mantra of you know, the Trump-Biden cockamamie garbage that's going on. Sickening. Let's move on to another direction. Some years ago, as I was updating and doing some work on Dr. Kelly's site, my twisted sense of humor began to come out, and I began to label, and I've talked about this before, various different categories. Danger, radiation, death by medicine, the heart of the matter. Well, that deals with heart disease and related things. There's a category called have you lost your mind, which is there dedicated to dealing with Alzheimer's, etc. I guess I'm going to have to do an article about Joe Biden, but I'd rather not. We got one called hemp to the jive. You can figure that one out. One's called In the Money. It all has to do with the greed and exactly what this is all about. Shot in the Dark, an old Peter Sellers movie from the 1960s. But in our particular meeting, it has to do with vaccinations. A Spoonful of Sugar makes the medicine go down, except this one originally was designed to discuss the amount of Ritalin, et cetera, that was being prescribed to young school children to calm them down. You know, the kids that go in and their school counselor would make some contacts. Well, this kid's got some attitude problems and this and that and needs to be calmed down. And, of course, pretty soon the kid winds up getting put on Ritalin, et cetera, et cetera. Another one called Warning Chemotherapy, Water Everywhere, of course, deals with and not a drop to drink because it's all been poisoned. So as we came up with these various different categories, I then have to write descriptions for them so that if someone goes strictly right to that category, they'll hear my commentary. Well, the one dealing on radiation states radiation, x-rays, mammograms, and more. I mean, just what do you think your cell phones and Wi-Fi are doing to you? And oh, gee, now it's all gone to 5G. Stop sleeping with that cell phone by your bedside each night. And while you're at it, the microwave in your kitchen ain't helping either. And those smart meters? Hoo-hoo. All these things are just turning up the temp and cooking us like the proverbial frog. Zap! And so today, we're going to touch on one of these various specific matters. Oh, by the way, interesting. Late August, I published a piece. The Russian government has recommended banning Wi-Fi and cell phones in primary schools. How interesting could that possibly be? The Russians. But what are we doing? Oh, no. Let's see. The teachers in most places in America today are maybe teaching a half a class in school. And, of course, they've all got 5G towers all over the schools. And the other half of the class is at home, probably on Wi-Fi on their computers. You see what's going on here? We're frying our brains, people. I have no doubt. You know, major changes in the last 15 and a half years that my wife and I have lived in this home. We have gone from, you know, hardwire plug-in computers to very high-level modems with Wi-Fi built into them because, after all, we've now got three or four cell phones in this house. We've got several, well, let's see, wait a minute, what do we got here? One, two, three, four, five. We got about six or seven computers in this house. Now, two of them, one of them is only on when I'm on the air. Another one I strictly use for bookkeeping. That one's on Wi-Fi. The one on the air is plugged in. It's hard plugged. But I'm sitting fairly close to the modem, Wi-Fi signal center, etc. We've got 4G electronic stuff running the power in this house. All of this stuff I've watched have an effect on me. Of course, I'm still sitting in front of the computer 16, 18 odd hours a day. All that stuff comes to an effect. And it's devastating. I will have, I'm not going to say dizzy spells, but little spells where I have a little difficulty. I realize I'm walking kind of funny. Interesting stuff, isn't it? Let's talk about something. I don't think I've done it before, but maybe I have. And if I have, I apologize. We're going to go over it again then, I guess. And this, I don't even think is in the right category. But who knows? Yes, apparently it is. It's called the Fungus and Cancer Connection. Studies show that fungus on or inside your body could not only cause cancer, but it also feeds it. Yeah. Your doctor or oncologist will never tell you this. If you've got cancer, then you've got fungus or a mold or candida, and it feeds the cancer. It is cancer in itself. But we're going to try to share with you for the next short while all that you need to know and how to deal with it. I don't know. This may take up the entire program, which is going to prevent me from getting to the last section. We may cut over and see if I can find a shorter piece on this. Let's talk about the Russian thing. Come on. These are things that need to be done here. I don't care what schools you go by. In this country, you can see these towers all over the place. And the kids, when my wife first started teaching, the kids were not allowed to have their cell phones out. And if they were caught on them, they would be taken away. And if they got caught three times, they wouldn't get their phones back. Well, the mommies and the daddies went down to school whining about, well, it's the only way I've got to get a hold of my child because I work or I'm on the road or I'm this and I'm that. Your kid is in school, lady. They don't need to be reached while you're in school. So on July 17th of this year, the Russian Ministry of Health published recommendations to schools to ban the use of Wi-Fi and cell phones in elementary schools. The Medical Department of the Russian Academy of Sciences and the Russian National Committee on Non-Ionizing Radiation Protection prepared the recommendations together with the Russian Ministry of Health. Now, the information was provided to the Children's Health Defense by Professor Oleg Grigoryev, doctor of whatever, PhD. He's the chairman of the Russian National Committee on Non-Ionizing Radiation Protection. The professor has been outspoken about the harms of wireless technology, has been leading the recent initiatives by the Russian government to protect the kids from harm. And he also tweeted about the news. Ministry of Health and Wi-Fi banned for primary school. Smartphones bunned in schools, too. Our proposal banned, it should have been, but they spelled it bunned. Our proposal became the official opinion in the new hygiene regulations for digital school. The electromagnetic exposure of children will decrease. The article goes on to say numerous studies show profound adverse effects from Wi-Fi. Professor Martin Paul's 2018 meta-analysis paper entitled Wi-Fi is an Important Threat to Human Health references studies showing Wi-Fi causes oxidative stress, sperm and testicular damage. Oh, is that why all those funny boys and girls are becoming the opposite of what they were born as? Interesting. Let's see. It also causes neuropsychiatric effects, including EEG changes, apoptosis, which is cell death, cellular DNA damage, endocrine changes, calcium overload. Considering the evidence of harm, scientists and medical associations have called to ban the use of Wi-Fi in schools and use wired networks instead. And that's as it should be in this country, my friends. Now, Russia is beginning to follow other countries around the world that have taken action to reduce the use of Wi-Fi in schools and protect the health of children. In 2013, Israel became the first country in the world to adopt limitations on the use of Wi-Fi in school. It banned Wi-Fi in kindergartens, limited the use of Wi-Fi in elementary schools. Wi-Fi is allowed for 3 hours per week in the first and second grade, 6 hours per week, not per day, per week for the third grade. And it must be turned off at all other times. In 2017, Cyprus banned Wi-Fi in kindergartens, halted the deployment of Wi-Fi in elementary schools. In addition, the Cyprus National Committee on Environment and Child Health initiated a nationwide campaign to raise awareness about cell phone and wireless radiation exposure to children. In the United States, in 2016, the governor appointed Maryland State Children's Environmental Health Protection Advisory Council issued a report advising the Department of Education to recommend that local school districts reduce exposure of school children to wireless devices and radiation, and to provide wired rather than wireless internet connection. No action was taken. Does that surprise you? That's right here in this country. No action was taken. They don't give a damn. So the action by the Russian Health Department follows another recent action by the ministry to encourage the reduction of children's exposure to wireless devices. In March of 2020, following the outbreak of COVID, Russia's Department of Health, together with the Scientific Research Institute of Hygiene, along with the Russian National Committee of Non-Ionizing Radiation Protection, published an article or a report entitled, Safety Recommendations for Children Who Use Digital Technologies to Study at Home. And the recommendation encouraged using the internet via a wired connection rather than Wi-Fi. Children's Health Defense also published a step-by-step guide on how to hardwire wireless devices for safe remote learning. In this country, the FCC, which allegedly regulates the safety of wireless technology, denies that wireless technology causes harm. Oh, you know, that's no surprise. They deny that wireless technology causes harm. Gee, I wonder who's back in their payroll. FCC health guidelines rely on the obsolete scientific assumption that the non-ionizing radiation emitted by microwave frequency used for wireless technology can be harmful only if they cause thermal change in tissue. That assumption has been proven false in thousands of studies, even before cell phones were commercialized in the 1980s. We'll get back to this as soon as the break's over. Got some new break music coming in and going out. For those of you who are enjoying that, enjoy this one.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Ladies and gentlemen, J.R. Moore here. We have a special promotion going on at Republic Broadcasting. This is a fundraiser for Republic Broadcasting involving the Energy Planner. Mail me a postcard. My address is at my website at thelibertyman.com. We pick a postcard every other Thursday. When your postcard is drawn out, you get to buy an energy planner for $215 instead of $285, $70 discount. $200 goes to Republic Broadcasting. You also get a 10% discount on my mattress pads. So get those postcards in, put your name, your telephone number, your email address on there, and when your postcard is drawn, you get to get an energy cleaner for $215 instead of $285. Mattress pads, 10% off. Help us out at Republic Broadcasting and help yourself to get an energy cleaner at a deep discount. It's a win-win situation for everybody. We hope you can get these postcards in soon. Thank you very much.
So, you love talk radio? Then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24/7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
The Republic Broadcasting Network late night premiere show Red Pill Hardcore is hosted by activists that want to hear from you, the listeners, so that you can get involved in the activism. Please call in at 800-313-9443 at 10 p.m. to enter the discussion. To book yourself as a guest, call our studio at 202-657-5715 or contact RBN staff. Remember, keep it real and take the Red Pill.
Is your property a financial burden and causing you grief? Have you tried to sell but can't find buyers? Or are you just too busy to sell your property? Don't worry. We have the right solution for you. We buy properties as is, with cash, close in 30 days, and pay all closing costs. Our service is ideal for property owners who are in pre-foreclosure, have high-end repair costs, experiencing financial hardship, going through costly divorces, are relocating, need cash for retirement, suffering family loss, or have tax liens. Whatever your situation may be, we can help you sell your property and get the money you need. If you own a single-family home or multiple family units, call us for a free consultation at 888-910-1037. That's 888-910-1037. Or visit our website at cashingproperty.com. That's cashingproperty.com. Sell your property fast and leave all your worries behind.
Fading out. All I can figure is he must have gotten a phone call and got distracted. Those things happen. You know. A couple of interesting lost in the folders. those things happen, man. That's cool, you know. Interesting pieces of music tonight for going in and out of the break. Added some new jazz pieces into here. It's one of those things that there was a time years ago where I would control all my broadcasts from my own studio. I would run the music here. Something would just pop and I'd drop it in. But, you know, we've got breaks here we need to be affected with. So anyway, back to our comment on the FCC, which, you know, denies that any of these things are causing any kind of damage. But as I stated, those assumptions by the FCC have proven to be false. Thousands of studies. Long before phones were commercialized in the 1980s. Contrary to the FCC's position, in the 1970s, the Russians had already acknowledged that the radiation emitted from radio and microwave frequencies-based technologies could be harmful at levels that are at least 1,000 times lower than the levels that create thermal effects. So despite massive evidence of harm, in December of last year, 2019, the FCC published a decision that there, quote, is no evidence of harm from wireless technology, end of quote, and they decided that a review of its health guidelines would not be required. As a result, in February of 2020, the Children's Health Defense sued the FCC. The main brief in the case was due on July 29th. of this year. I've got to do some digging up and see if I can find a copy of it. This particular article was originally published in July of 2020. The main brief was due 9 days later. I'll get a hold of Children's Health Defense, see if we can find out. I want to take the balance of this program down a different path tonight. It's still going to be related to all that we do. I want to introduce you to, no, I'm not bringing a live guest on. I wish he were still alive. A piece that was written some years ago by Dr. Ralph Moss. Moss had certainly an interesting relationship with Dr. Kelly. William Donald Kelly, one of the most significant figures in the history of alternative cancer treatments, passed away on January the 30th, 2005, at the age of 79. Cause of death? Congestive heart failure. Had a long history of heart problems with severe rhythm disturbances, all of which began back in the 1960s. Kelly was born November the 1st, 1925, on an 80-acre dirt farm in Winfield, Kansas. I've been there, at that very farm, not just Winfield, Kansas. His father had died young of a heart attack, and during the Great Depression, his mother raised three sons alone, all three of whom went to college and graduated school and became successful professionals. I met one of Kelly's brothers. Kelly was an unusual child. He once told Ross that Ralph Moss that when he was three, he had a vision of Jesus approaching him as he was playing in a sand pile. And Jesus took Kelly into his arms and instructed him to become a medical missionary. Kelly later moved to Texas, studied at Baylor University, and under the influence of his father-in-law, became a successful orthodontist, working 12 to 14 hours per day, putting braces on the teeth of the children in Grapevine, Texas. And he and his first wife, adopted four children and lived the typical suburban existence of the 1950s. I knew Kelly's first wife, and sadly she passed several years ago, a marvelous woman to continue to work with. And even though they'd been apart for so many years from a business standpoint and what their goals were for other people, they continued to work together for many, many, many years. I know two of their children, one of whom I did not like, nor did she like me. And the other is, of course, John Kelly, who I make continued reference to. John is still basically operating the family business as well as can be done in these horrific times. But going back to those days, in what little spare time Kelly had practicing as a dentist, he restored antique automobiles. Always a determined worker, he practically lived on candy bars and other junk food. About 1960, his health began to deteriorate. First thing he noticed was diminishing eyesight. Also developed muscle cramps and chest pains and went into a severe mental depression. The culmination came in 1964 when he suffered acute gastric distension and was hospitalized. And a series of x-rays showed the signs of advancing pancreatic cancer, including lesions in his lungs, his hip, and his liver. This was 1964, people. His surgeon refused to operate, saying that Kelly had only 4 to 8 weeks to live. The doctors were so certain of their diagnosis that they felt no need to take a biopsy of the tumor, an omission that was to hound Kelly in later years. He was ready to give up, but his redoubtable frontier mother came from Kansas to rescue him. She threw out the junk food and the meat and instructed him to eat only fresh and raw fruits and vegetables and nuts and grains and seeds. And after several months, Kelly began to feel better. several months. Oh, you mean beyond the time that the doctors say he should be dead? Kelly, at that point, even began to return to work. In a health food store, he then discovered the work of dietary pioneer Max Gerson, who had written the book Cancer Therapy, 50 Cases, which advocated a similar program. Now, in my working with Kelly for the last 7 years of his life and the travels that he and I occasionally did together, he admitted to me the Gerson plan was the finest nutritional program in the world, bar none. Of course, Max Gerson's long since deceased, but his daughter is still, to the best of my knowledge, she's still with us. I met her several times. I guess I should look into that, see how she's doing. Well, after 6 or 7 months, Kelly stopped improving. He then developed more severe digestive problems, probably from the advancing cancer. And he therefore began taking pancreatic enzymes, at first simply to aid his digestion. But he eventually increased the dose to 50 enzyme capsules per day. And he then discovered the work of Scottish embryologist John Beard, who early in the 20th century had postulated that pancreatic enzymes were a natural control for cancer. And he also encountered the writings of Dr. Edward Howell, author of Enzyme Nutrition, and an early apostle of the raw plant food diet. In time, Kelly healed from his own disease and subsequently went on to treat over 30,000 other patients. Initially, Kelly discovered that while many people did well on his diet, others did not. His second wife, Susie, was one of those. Turned out that she needed rare red meat in order to control her severe allergies. And thus was born Kelly's concept of metabolic typing, in which different people, because of genetic heritage and environmental factors, had different requirements for vegetarian or carnivorous diets, or raw or cooked or whatever. Kelly was influenced in his thinking about meat by the work of Bilhammer Stephenson, a Harvard-trained explorer who, among other things, had shown that the Eskimo remained cancer-free on a fatty red meat diet. Well, Kelly in time went on to become the author of several books, including his self-help book, One Answer to Cancer, first published in 1967. Now, that was less of a book than it was a booklet. I have a copy of that on my shelf. 30 pages, 35 pages was about the extent of it. And as time went on, I met many people who had acquired that booklet, that used it as their guide and became cancer-free, and were still alive at that point, some 20-odd, 25 years later. Then, of course, there was the updated edition entitled, well, that 67. By 30 years later, in the late 90s, there was a great expanded version of it called One Answer to Cancer with Cancer Cure. And then in 2001, Kelly connected with a so-called publisher who sold him on the idea of, hey, booby baby, we can kind of redesign the book, put a nice fancy colored cover on it, and we'll get this in every bookstore in the country. Well, that never happened. Oh, the book was published. The guy was involved with some of the editing, and unfortunately, when I received my copy of it, the book was called Cancer Curing the Incurable Without Surgery, Chemotherapy, or Radiation. Problem is, as I noticed right away, there was some important sections of the protocol that for some reason had disappeared out of the book. I didn't like that. Kelly's test for cancer over the years developed this Kelly enzyme test, the Kelly Index of Malignancy. But that's back in the day when he had a massive operation in Texas. All of that stuff was done on computers that would take up more room than your whole house would hold today. all of which can be done on a laptop. Amazing. Now, let me share a brief interjection here with you, something I've added to this. In 2004, shortly before Kelly's death, the Food and Drug Administration issued a cease and desist order against Kelly and his then publisher for the printing and marketing of the book Cancer Curing the Incurable Without Surgery, Chemotherapy, or Radiation. You see, dear listeners, in America, it seems to be illegal to cure cancer or to suggest that it can be cured. No, it took until 2013 before efforts were put in place to not only fully restore Kelly's complete protocol, but to put a new name on the book. Hence, Victory Over Cancer Without Surgery, Chemotherapy, or Radiation began shipment on November the 1st, 2015. In addition, the book was greatly enhanced beyond what the two previous versions of the book had offered. When I say greatly enhanced, it does not mean that, and I became that editor at the Kelly Estate's request. It was not to alter any of Kelly's words, not to alter his protocols, but to fully replace and restore his protocols. But then, because Kelly had such a reputation that the mainstream medical community and others wanted to destroy, I made a decision to add a series of lectures and interviews that he had done, because I want the reader, I want the cancer victim, I want the people to understand that Kelly isn't who the media has tried to portray him to be. He went on the Phil Donahue show many, many years ago. Donahue just tore him a new one to the point Kelly just sat there and hung his head and never said a thing. He just could not believe that all that he was doing and all that he'd accomplished at that point in time. Well, that's another story. In 1970, Kelly was convicted of practicing medicine without a license. You see, he was a dentist, remember? In 1976, the court suspended his dental license for 5 years. And for a while in the late 70s, he even worked in a clinic south of Tijuana. Kelly's high point of fame came in 1980 when he treated the popular U.S. film actor Steve McQueen for advanced mesothelioma, a form of chest and abdomen cancer generally caused by asbestos exposure. Well, McQueen died after undergoing surgery in 1980. Kelly later claimed the queen had actually been cured, but then murdered because he was going to blow the lid off the cancer racket. But in the public's mind, however, that failure dealt a blow to all of Kelly's claims of success with cancer. On another time, we'll talk a little bit more about the McQueen story, because I've got more of it. In the 1970s, Kelly was reasonable in his statements about medical orthodoxy, and although he appreciated the difficulties of changing America's lifestyle, he looked forward to a fair and proper evaluation of his methods. But as time progressed, he became increasingly despondent, realizing that this would probably never happen. He also became increasingly paranoid. In the 1980s, he moved up to rural Washington State. His marriage to Susie had broken up. He'd lost control of his once thriving organization, and his mental and physical health began to deteriorate once again. In the late 1980s, he and his then companion, a cardiologist named Carol Morrison, MD, who he'd allegedly cured of breast cancer, moved to rural Pennsylvania. Ralph Moss had visited him twice in the small town of Saxonburg, north of Pittsburgh. He said, "I found this couple of former successful orthodontists and a board-certified heart specialist living in a small rented bungalow on Walter Street, surviving on Dr. Kelly's monthly Social Security check." Kelly was a shadow of his former self. Although he still did coffee enemas every day, he had reverted back to drinking huge bottles of Coke, to which he ascribed health-giving properties. He and Dr. Morrison seemed only tangentially interested in medicine. They were too busy running their daisy wheel printer day and night, churning out racist and anti-Semitic tracts. Hard to connect this bitter wreck of a man with the vibrant individual of earlier decades. But it was around that time that Nicholas J. Gonzalez, a recent graduate of Cornell Medical College, first came to prominence in New York as a practitioner of Kelly's methods. Gonzalez was always scrupulous in crediting Kelly for his contribution to his own work. And yet the Kelly that Moss had met in 1980 seethed with anger at the world, and particularly at those who had tried to help him, including Gonzalez. There was a time that Kelly even sued Gonzalez in a vituperative nuisance suit. Suit was dismissed with some unkind words from the judge. After Morrison died, Kelly moved back to his mother's Kansas farm, where his strange, eventful history had begun nearly 80 years before. And yet, asked to sum up Kelly's contribution, Gonzalez wrote the following. And by the way, Gonzalez did write one of the forewords in our book, Victory Over Cancer. Nick Gonzalez was a very enjoyable man to speak with. Over the years, Gonzalez began, just about anything that could ever be said about anybody, good, bad, and indifferent, has been said about William Donald Kelly. Regardless of how true or untrue such statements might be, my wish is that he be remembered for what he truly was, a very brilliant man who sacrificed all personal happiness for what he believed to be the truth. And like so many other brilliant men, he fit in nowhere and generated controversy, adulation, and scorn for much of his adult life, wherever he went, whatever he did. The world certainly treated him poorly, and too often in his later years he responded in kind. His faults, like his strengths, are legion and extraordinary, and he lived an eccentric life, always on the fringe. And at one point during the early 90s, I heard he was scavenging food out of dumpsters. But despite all this, Gonzalez said, I've always remained focused and continue to remain so on his unique ability to see a truth that no one else could see, and stick with it, regardless of the cost. Gonzalez then goes on to talk more in depth about how he first met Kelly. At a chiropractor's office in Queens, New York, in July of 1981. And I'm not going to probably have time to tell you this whole story. I don't know where we're at time-wise with closing music and all that kind of stuff. But got about a minute and a half. All right. But that was a commentary written by Ralph Moss shortly after Kelly passed away, and obviously a lot of it's been picked up and from Nick Gonzalez, etc. It's a marvelous story. Gonzalez closes by saying, for now, let's remember him kindly, with gratitude for what he did and what he tried to do. And I will tell you, I've not even begun to tell you all that I know about Kelly and some of these stories. I certainly invite you to visit the website, and it's Dr. Kelly, drkelly.info. Spend some time there. You do so, you're going to be guided. There's answers for a wide variety of health-related issues. I had a very lengthy meeting with my own doctor today. And by the time it was done, he's asking me questions. It was kind of interesting. But he knows what I'm involved with, and he's never turned his nose up at it. We each learn from each other. That's what the human animal is supposed to do. My friends, I thank you for your time today. Hope you've had some things to think about, some directions. We will, Lord willing, be back with you tomorrow with another installment of The Edge. And I've got more crud in my throat tonight, trying to clean it out. I'm gagging on it. What do you want? I'm going to go get some cognac to wash it all down with or something. Take care of yourselves as we close on out of here with Ella Fitzgerald. Let's begin the beginning. Till the good Lord sees fit together again. I'll probably see y'all at sundown. Good night. So tender, it brings back a night of tropical splendor. It brings back a memory evergreen. I'm with you.
once more under the stars. And down by the shore an orchestra's playing. And even the palms seem to be swaying when they begin. Again is past all endeavor, except when that tune clutches my heart. And there we are, swearing to love forever and promising never, never to divine, what rapture serene, till clouds came along to disperse the joys we had tasted. And now when I hear people curse the chance that was wasted, I know but too well what they mean. So suddenly know what heaven we're in when they begin the beginning. When they begin the beginning.
Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and the new app, Koshertified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.